Hey gang, Kevin Strange here.
Jamie Daniels.
Listen, we're going to be radically changing the way the Patreon works in a few months, but for now, you come in at the $1 level, the $1 level, and you get access to all of my audiobooks, right?
Right.
You get Jorek and the Shaugus Steel, Jorek and the Swamp Phantoms of Vic. You get Cotton Candy.
McHumans. Humans Under the Bed.
You get
Computer Face.
And you get Holy Matrimony. These are hours and hours and hours of audiobooks. As if that wasn't enough, only for $1, and not a dollar each. It's a dollar a month. A dollar a month gets you access to all of that, plus the Overrun episodes of our sister podcast, Watching with Strangers. We do a weekly Overrun podcast every single week. You get a new episode of that show. It's ridiculous not to jump in, help us, support the podcast. We're trying to get 20 patrons in the month of May. And I promise you, in the next couple months, it's going to be worth it. We're going to convert this over. It's going to be a book club, gang. It's going to have merch. I'm going to be giving away t-shirts and buttons and stickers and novels, exclusive novellas and books from Kevin Strange. Just get in now. Get these cool podcasts and audiobooks and stick around because it's going to get only better.
Right? Travis is my sister.
All right, there you go.
Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. Then you'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to Strangers. I'd be like, Read to Strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to Strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers. Reading to Strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Kevin Strange here.
Jeremy Daniels.
For another episode of Reading to Strangers.
There he is. I thought we were going to get a low
it's
energy
been
a,
well, it's been a low energy kind of a week, my friend. It's been... Boy, it's been a week. It's been a week for everybody right now. I mean, do you realize that as of last night, I don't know when they started it, but CNN had a countdown.
For James Comey.
For when Comey was going to testify, because they were convinced that he was going to walk in there with the secret Russian documents and that Donald Trump would maybe be impeached by this time tomorrow.
Mm.
Boy, oh boy, did that clock disappear.
Within the first 5 minutes of that. I only watched the first 5 minutes, and he's like, they're like, was he in collusion? No.
No. Donald Trump is not under investigation.
No.
And Comey went on to drop a ton of bombshells today.
On himself.
He indicted, not indicted, but he, I don't know what the proper term for it is, but he, I'm not a fucking lawyer, but he basically snitched on Loretta Lynch, basically saying, all kinds of shit came out today, saying that she, what was it that he said about her?
I don't remember exactly. I know that it was all blown up in the face, and then I saw CNN had to print a retraction, and then they started in on John McCain because
McCain said some crazy shit. Yeah. It was a big shit show for the left, and they had started the day. I got up and was looking at social media on Twitter and Facebook this morning, and it was all popcorn.jpg and all kinds of GIFs of popcorn eating GIFs, all getting ready to see Donald Trump get roasted by Comey. And by the end of the day, it was fuck this government, man.
I know, it's the saddest decline I've ever seen.
It's because they live in another fucking reality. They honestly and truly believe that Satan himself is in the White House and everybody agrees with them, except for assholes on the internet.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that narrative that they've created for themselves isn't reality.
Realize this guy was just as bad as their guy.
Yeah.
Which was as bad as the other side's guy before, which was other as bad as the guy before that.
Yeah. So. Welcome to politics.
Yep.
Welcome to politics. Everybody sucks.
Yep.
But things have been crazy beyond that. I think we're about to get Theresa May. What the fuck is her name?
Need more reference than that.
The British president or leader of parliament, prime minister.
Let me look it up. I can't think. I should.
Anyway, we're about to get her reelected, I believe. I think that's how things are going. Today in the British elections, so that's kind of crazy. Also, it's funny that that's happening in tandem with the Comey hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of politics being thrown around today on social media and.
Theresa May. That's right.
That's what I said, yeah, Theresa May. Things are heating up here in Strangeville, too. We got a lot of, there's people taking a lot of shots, throwing a lot of garbage on the front lawn, as it were.
I know, I was listening to your ranting with strangers.
Did you listen to all that?
Not all of it, but yeah, it's like three quarters of the way through it.
Yeah, well, you got the gist of it then. We've got our new host here on the Strangeville Podcast Network, Jeremy Maddox. He agreed to do a podcast the other night called John Podesta's Pizza Party. Mm-hmm. And it basically turned out to be, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was a trap or that we were 100% bamboozled, but shit got weird on the podcast quick, and then shit got weird, even weirder when they posted the podcast. And it turned into a huge fucking shit show. And we're going to talk all about that on the other side of the reading because, you know, gang, you know how this works, gang. We want you to listen to the fiction before you get to the drama. So we ain't going to talk about all that yet, but we're just setting it up that Jeremy Maddox was on this Pizza Party podcast. And I wouldn't say 100% that we were bamboozled, but... let's just say they didn't want to talk to Jeremy Maddox about Jeremy Maddox.
They wanted to talk about the devil himself.
They wanted to talk about Kevin Strange the entire time, and they threw a ton of garbage on my front yard. And so me and Jeremy Maddox did a Ranting at Strangers, a special episode of Ranting at Strangers, where we...
unloaded it is not all you'd have to say. It was like a big delivery truck worth of fuck Kevin Strange.
They delivered it to the front door, and we went out and took the package and walked it back.
Everywhere.
We cleaned up the front yard on the podcast and set things straight, as we always do. Jeremy Daniels. We always have to set things straight with facts.
Jeremy McElmore. I meant Maddox.
Yeah, not John McElmore.
Jeremy B. McElmore.
Jeremy B. McLemore. I don't know if I haven't said that to him off the air, so when Jeremy Maddox listens to this, Jeremy Daniels believes you sound like John B. McLemore from the Yes Town podcast, which is fair. Wasn't that a... Where did he live?
Georgia.
Yeah, so it's, you know, he lived in...
Southern thing, I get it.
What was the name of his town?
Shit Town.
Yeah, but it was Woodstock. Woodstock, Alabama.
Yeah.
That's what it was. He's from Alabama. So
I just got to know if Jeremy Maddox has a maze, a hedge maze.
Hedge maze in his backyard. So yeah, we had to do some cleanup. And as we always do on these podcasts, all we have to do is sprinkle a little drop of facts. And it disperses all this garbage instantly. I mean, it doesn't even require any effort. It's like effortless.
Well, they're not organized attacks. They're not even as organized as like a ISIS attack.
No, what this Christoph Paul dude reminds me of is a guy who just comes in, the guy that comes in the mosh pit. Everybody's moshing in the mosh pit. Everybody's enjoying the concert. And then you've got that one drunk asshole who comes in throwing knees and elbows and punches in all directions. He's punching chicks in the side of the head. He's kneeing the guy in front of him. It's got his back to him. He's knocking dudes down and stepping on them. And it's just like, fuck, we got to get this guy out of here.
And
it's
the
like,
second you hit him, he's like, what do you mean to that?
Yeah, and then he's all indignant. Like, I'm just here having fun, man. No, you just mowed over five people in your pursuit of fun there, drunkie. And that's how this it feels like this Christoph Paul guy was when he was slinging insults. It was like, dude, did you take 1 second to verify any of this information? You're going to disparage the cover artists of my books only to find out, to your horror, that they're the guys that do everybody's fucking book covers? I mean, that's retarded. That is such an easy thing to, that's only one, you know, just go listen to Ranting at Strangers if you really want to hear the real nitty gritty of what we got into.
The play-by-play, so to speak.
Yeah, the play-by-play. But we're not here to do another duo of that podcast. However, once the, Jeremy Maddox and I recorded that before the Pizza Party podcast had aired, he called me and was like, holy fuck, dude. All that dude wanted to do was talk about you. And I was like, no, 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 let's do this on a podcast. So we fired up a podcast and we talked about it. And that happened. And so we had set the guy who runs the Pizza Party podcast is a dude named Jamie, who I've never even heard of. What's funny is I've never heard of most of these fucking people. And they are all talking about me. And then they call me egotistical when they can't keep my fucking name out of their mouth. But this podcast was set to air on a Sunday. So we recorded the podcast that they recorded. The Pizza Party podcast was recorded on Friday. Our response was recorded on Saturday. The podcast actually came out on a Sunday, and I scheduled our response to come out on a Monday. Before our response even had a chance to come out, as soon as that Pizza Party podcast went live on that Sunday, this Jamie dude tags me and a bunch of other people. He tags Brian Keene, he tags Craig Spector, and he tags Christoph Paul, and he tags the Deadite Press editor, Jeff Burke, in this. And I guess Jeff Burke was brought up a little bit, so they tagged him too. They're basically trying to tag everybody they could to make this post as controversial as possible. Then sponsored the post on Facebook, boosted the post monetarily on Facebook. So I'm already thinking, like, have we been bamboozled? Like, did they drag him on this podcast to throw a bunch of garbage in my front yard and then try to get as many people to listen to it in the horror and bizarro community as possible? You know, was this just a tabloid, you know, drama cast? And so I go in there in the thread, and I say simply, our response to this podcast will be up tomorrow morning. Here's the link to my website. And what ensued was 5 hours and 150 something comments worth of craziness, which we will talk about after the jump, after the fiction reading. So we're going to, it's probably going to be long, so we're going to cut this segment a little bit short. We normally do our first segment at around 20 minutes. We're going to wrap it up now.
Okay.
And when we get back after the break, we're going to get into the real nitty-gritty of this ridiculous debate me, bro, shellacking I took on Facebook the other night. And that's what's going to happen. But before then, we're going to listen to an episode of Computer Face. Computer Face Part 3, right?
Yep.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about Computer Face every week. Drop a few more nuggets in there, some thoughts about, you know, the more origin tales, more things that inspired it. But this week, there's so much fucking drama going on that there's not even really time to get to that, which is a shame because this is supposed to be the Reading to Strangers podcast, not the Gossip to Strangers podcast, you know? So, what's going on in Part 3? So we have, let's set up what happened in Part 2. So in Part 2, Computer Face has woken up in the apocalypse, and he's run into this retriever machine with a human inside of it going mad. and met a mysterious black woman.
Mm-hmm. And this week, she's a black woman and she's got friends like this.
Yes. At the end of episode two, a faceless man drags Computer Face into a building. Mm-hmm. There are more survivors of the robot apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And so, part three, what we're about to hear, we meet a cast of characters. We meet a band of rebels, mm-hmm. human survivors who are standing up and fighting against the machines.
And one of them's named after a way I mistakenly said another author's name when we looked at Strange House.
Yeah, it was an homage to a Jeremy typo when we were typing up royalties, the quarterly royalties for our authors, and he typed out John Bruni's name as John Brundy, and I made an homage to that. I was writing Computer Face right around that time, and so I called one of the characters in this book Brundy because of that. So you get to meet Brundy, you get to meet Shitface McKenzie, you get to find out that the black woman's name is General Uterus, and why, maybe you don't learn why they call her General Uterus in this episode, that maybe it's the next episode. One, yeah. And then you get to meet, I just forgot it. It's General Uterus and Commander Zeiss. You get to meet Commander Zeiss, the leader of this, ragtag group of human survivors. And and you also meet little Trevor, the mechanics guy, mm-hmm. the guy that knows all the stuff about machines. You get to meet him too. And that's their little ragtag group. And we get to meet them, and they're going to interrogate Computer Face because they think he works for the Machine Army. And we get to learn quite a few things about the Human Resistance and the Robot Army in this episode. So, gang, I hope you enjoy it. Jeremy, are you ready for this?
Oh, I'm ready.
You ready for Computer Face Part 3?
Oh, yeah. Good computer all up in my face.
We'll see you on the other side, and we'll learn about the shit show that was the Debate Me, Bro. internet debate between me and Jeff Burke. All right, we'll see you on the other side. Bye.
This is Jeremy Maddox, host of The Quiet Place. Has anyone ever told you that you have anger issues? It's okay, because so do I. And you can hear all about them every week on The Quiet Place. That's right, baby. I have officially moved into Strangeville's neighborhood, and there will be no sacred cows or taboos on this show. Tune in to KevinTheStrange.com. to hear The Quiet Place, as well as Reading to Strangers and Watching with Strangers. And tell your easily triggered friends that we aim to offend.
On your fucking knees, machine. As the thresher stomped by, spraying blood and gore from the sky like a meat monsoon, Computer Face found himself surrounded by magnet sticks similar to the one the black woman had used on him. Now! The man speaking to him wore an eye patch and held two short magnet sticks in the shape of pistols. There were four others with him. To his left stood the guy with the brown mask over his face. Only now that Computer Face had the chance to look at him, he realized it wasn't a mask at all. It was his face, or lack thereof. The skin of his face had been completely torn off, leaving only a scarred up, mangled nose and lipless grin. The musculature of his face was exposed and had been for some time from the look of the brown, hardened scar tissue. Cumulatively, these features caused the man's face to look like it was covered in a thick layer of shit. Shitface held a magnet stick that was shaped similar to a rifle, complete with a stock to rest on his shoulder. He looked nervously through a slit in the door, watching as the sound of the thresher's booming footsteps grew increasingly more distant as the gigantic robot stomped by. "We're all clear," Shitface said. "We weren't spotted." Next to him was a man the size of a football player or pro wrestler. This guy had a shaved head and wore goggles on his forehead above his eyes, but his most distinguishing feature was the gigantic necklace he wore around his neck. It was made of glowing red balls, which Computer Face realized was the same type of eyeballs as those attached to the retriever robot's antennae, giving his face a look like he was perpetually telling scary stories around a campfire. His magnet stick was thick enough that it required both hands to wield, complete with two sets of long prongs, one on either side, resembling a great battle axe. In stark contrast, next to him stood a squat, fat little man with huge glasses that magnified his eyes, giving him the appearance of a fat bug that never seemed to blink. His magnet stick was the length of a baseball bat and had a cluster of prongs at its tip resembling a mace. And next to him stood the black woman. They were all dressed in paramilitary gear similar to that of the black woman. The dirty, torn-up uniforms all had the letters RDA emblazoned on them. This little group of soldiers looked as if they'd seen a lot of action. "I'd do what he said, machine." The black woman motioned at all of the strange weaponry. "Unless you want five of these things up your ass." Computerface dropped the robot arm whip and raised his hands in submission before slowly sinking to his knees, allowing Shitface to tie his hands behind his back. "Really wish people would stop calling me that," he said, looking directly at Eyepatch. "He doesn't think he's a robot?" Eyepatch said, lowering his weapon, motioning for the rest of the crew to do the same. "I told you," the black woman said. "Fascinating," Bug Eyes said, getting right up next to the bound man, studying him like a science project. "Careful," Eyepatch said. "You saw what he did to that retriever. He's strong as a fucking bull." "You people were watching all that? Why didn't you help her?" Computer Face nodded at the black woman. "She would have been killed if I hadn't stopped that thing out there." "Not exactly true," Bug Eyes said, still looking Computer Face over like a lab animal. "She would have been captured, injected with a cluster of highly aggressive nanobots, dismembered, and bottled up inside of any number of different punishment bots, or fed to the Thresher."
"Nobody survives the Thresher," the big man said. His deep voice somehow added weight to his menacing bulk.
"I did," Shitface said, his scarred-up grin resembling a cluster of sun-baked earthworms. He pointed at his face, "and I got prettier."
"You only got out of that thing because I climbed up and took you out," big man said, pointing an accusatory finger at his comrade.
The finger was just a stump, cut off a little more than halfway down the digit. "Bullshit, Brundy. I was doing just fine on my own before you decided to come hog all the glory, as usual." Brundy crossed over to Shitface in two short strides, getting right up next to his hideous visage.
"I can take you back there. Is that what you want, Mackenzie?"
"Try it, asshole," Mackenzie said, pulling his rifle-like weapon up between the two of them, pointing it directly into Brundy's chest.
"Get a room, you two,"
Eyepatch barked, scowling at their macho outburst with a disapproving glare.
"Sorry, Commander Zeiss,"
the two men said in unison, stepping back into position over Computer Face without taking their angry gazes off of one another.
"Anyway, General Uterus could have taken out a dozen of those retrievers single-handedly. She was in no danger at all,"
Commander Zeiss said, beaming at the black woman like a proud parent.
"She was out scouting for survivors."
"I saw you in that pit," General Uterus said. "Never saw any robot like you before. You looked confused when you crawled out of there. Figured I'd bump into you and see what happened. Never expected you to attack and destroy one of your own kind."
"For the last time, I'm not a fucking robot," Computer Face screamed, straining his restraints. I can't remember who I am. I don't remember anything from before I woke up in the rubble, but I know I'm not one of those fucking things outside."
"Interesting," Bug Eyes said, inspecting Computer Face's arms and torso. "It appears he's had his skin modified with a durable flexoplastic exoskeleton."
"That don't prove shit," Brundy said. "I've got flexoplastic skin. Most last generation RDA soldiers do. Don't make me a robot."
What makes me not a robot is that I'm not a fucking robot, Computer Face said, his blood pressure rising.
He really doesn't know, does he? Bug Eyes said.
Know what?
Computer Face was getting angry. He was about to tear the little binding off his hands and see how many of these freaks he could take down before their magnetic weapons killed him, when Mackenzie picked up a mostly shattered mirror from off the debris-strewn floor and held it up, showing Computer Face what he really looked like. Computer Face stared at his reflection in disbelief. His entire face was gone. In its place was a long, flat, rectangular screen grafted onto his forehead, down the sides of his face, and onto his chin. But the more awful thing, if that was possible, was the image displayed on the screen itself. A glowing green skull, completely devoid of skin and muscle tissue, stared back at him, mocking the bewildered man with a huge, skinless smile. Worst of all were his lidless, unblinking eyes that sat there inside their hollow sockets, their crazed, hateful stare, the only remaining vestige of his former humanity. I believe, Bug Eyes said, that this piece of entertainment technology was called an iPad. The pit you were found in must have been the remains of the city's techno museum. General Uterus said you were laying in a pool of chemicals, as evidenced by the heavy staining and scarring on your body. Bug Eyes looked at his fellow soldiers. If what he says is true, if he truly is not part of the machine army, it is possible that this techno artifact, this iPad, was somehow grafted onto his face. But the amount of time it would take for such a process, it would take months, possibly even years. A human would die. If not by the chemical exposure, then surely from starvation or dehydration. And yet, here he sits. It is also possible, I suppose, that the flexoplastic exoskeleton also reacted to the chemical pool in such a way that it kept his body nourished and healthy while the iPad slowly fused to his skull.
iPad face, Mackenzie said, mockingly. Motherfucking iPad face, Brundy said, howling with laughter. The rest of the soldiers joined in. Commander Zeiss said, boys, we got an iPad face on our hands.
Computer Face,
the disfigured man whispered, his head lowered nearly to the ground. What was that?
Bug Eyes said, leaning over the yellow and purple stained naked man. Call me Computer Face!
He snapped his restraints like twigs and leapt to his feet, knocking Bug Eyes down. The hulking man screamed with rage, clawing at the black, rectangled metal on his face.
I'm not a fucking machine!
Put him down, boys, Commander Zeiss said, jumping backward out of harm's way. He pulled his twin magnet guns and fired a pair of bolts into Computer Face's chest. The bolts sparked to life, sending volts of electricity leaping across the man's naked, discolored body. But they did not slow him down. Computer Face turned and smashed a table containing spare parts for weapons and food rations.
Mackenzie, take the left. Brundy, the right. Uterus, back me up. Trevor, find a way to shut this thing off.
Bug Eyes looked at Commander Zeiss. The little man, Trevor, was frozen to his spot, startled at the sudden outburst of violence so close to him.
Yes, sir,
he said finally and scurried away.
Let's make this quick. We're making a lot of noise,
Commander Zeiss said. Mackenzie slowly circled around the broken table, pulling a small dagger-sized version of the magnet weapon from his belt.
Settle down, big guy, he said in a mock-soothing tone, his lipless smile yawning wide. We're not gonna hurt you. Much. Mackenzie dove at Computer Face, stabbing him in the pectoral, sending another wave of electricity arcing through his body. The huge, angry man screamed, totally unaffected by the magnetic pulse, and swatted the small soldier away like a rag doll, sending him crashing into a perimeter wall across the room. This gave Brundy time to circle to the right and come up behind Computer Face. He was the same size as Computer Face, easily able to grab the hulking man around the arms and lift him off the ground. Brundy then slammed Computer Face onto his stomach, pinning him to the floor.
Stay down now if you know what's good for you, robot.
Computer Face roared again and whipped the back of his head into Brundy's nose, headbutting him with considerable force. Dazed, Brundy released his grip on Computer Face, who shrugged the big man off him and started to climb to his feet. But Mackenzie was already back in the action, taking hold of Computer Face's left arm while Brundy recovered his composure and grabbed Computer Face's right, pinning him back on his knees. Before he could mount an additional offense, General Uterus had her weapon pressed against the side of his head. Commander Zeiss aimed his own directly between Computer Face's glowing green eyes. Finish it, Uterus said, before the machines come back. My pleasure, Zeiss said, flipping the switch on his pistol magnet. Computer Face focused his anger, preparing himself to kill everyone in the room if the next shot somehow didn't end his life first. Wait, Trevor said, waddling up to the cluster of people. Look, there, in the side of his head. That's a basic early 21st century connector port. I can access any information stored there. We can't just kill him. Let me try to unlock his memories first. If he's human, as he says, then he could be a valuable asset to the Resistance. General Uterus seemed to be the only one listening to the small man. You really think that thing's human?
No way that's a person, Brundy said. But maybe what's in his head can help us find the Quiet Land.
Zeiss's eyes bulged. Don't talk about the Quiet Land in front of a machine. Brundy remained defiant.
We're gonna kill it anyway. What difference does it make?
Because, dipshit, Zeiss said. What if it's broadcasting everything we say right to the nearest forge? Mackenzie sneered, scratching at his skinless face. Stupid shit. The Quiet Land isn't real anyway. A place where no robots can go? A paradise where all technology is forbidden? You really believe that shit? Brundy frowned. A real look of disappointment crossed his face at the thought of the Quiet Land being a myth. He mumbled,
It has to be real.
No, you know what? Zeiss said, looking directly into Computer Face's eyes as though he was talking to the entire machine army. I hope it's broadcasting to every forge in the state. Fuck the whole country. I want them all to see that we can beat them. Even if it's one machine at a time, we won't quit. We won't be wiped out. We're not afraid of their punishment bots. It's punishment enough just living in the same world with you rust buckets. We're gonna find the Quiet Land, and when we do, we'll regroup. We'll build our forces so strong, our weapons so powerful, not even the Threshers will be able to stand up to our might. Brundy and Mackenzie cheered. Zeiss raised a hand, quieting them. You know where it is? He continued, leaning down so he was face to face with their captive. All robots know where it is. Your leader taunts people with stories about it when you put us in your goddamn torture machines. Now, you tell us where the Quiet Land is, or I'll blow your godforsaken computer head right off. Zeiss stuck the prongs of his magnet pistol right up against Computer Face's glowing green display screen. Tell me now. Computer Face looked the military leader directly in his good eye. Do it. Zeiss flipped the switch, bringing his weapon to life. Already, small arcs of electricity danced across Computer Face's display screen, warping and deforming the image of his skull face. Last chance! Fuck you! As Zeiss pressed the button, Trevor lunged forward and knocked the lethal weapon away from the display, causing the electric bolt to slam into the concrete floor, rendering it harmless. What the... Zeiss looked at him, disbelief playing across his grizzled face. We have to get in there and see what we can find, Trevor said, casting his eyes to the floor in a submissive manner. He seemed almost embarrassed to have saved Computer Face's life. No reason to go blowing his head off just yet. Zeiss ground his teeth. Do not ever do that again. I'm sorry, sir, Trevor said. It's just
We only have this one chance at this. I might find a gold mine of information about the machine army in there. Maybe even the location of the Quiet Land.
Zeiss turned to General Uterus, who stood stark still through the whole thing, not so much as flinching toward Computer Face's aid when her commander was about to kill him.
What do you think? Do we let the weirdo fuck around in the machine's head, or blast him?
Uterus didn't speak for several beats. Finally, her eyes flicked over and made contact with Computer Face's own, but only for a split second.
Nothing to lose, sir. Let's see what he can find.
Her eyes flicked back, resting a moment longer, just enough time to convey a simple thought. Now, we're even.
Okay, Trevor, the military leader said. Get into its brain and see what you can find. Mackenzie, Brundy, clean up this fucking mess.
Then he walked away.
Don't mind him, General Uterus said, pulling up a beat-up office chair next to Computer Face. He's a hothead who'd rather shoot his gun off than his mouth, and he runs his mouth a lot, so that's saying something.
Computer Face didn't respond. He just stared forward.
These guys let you go? Are you going to flip out again? Or can our technician, Trevor, see if he can get inside your head and unlock your memories? If you are what you say you are, then you should have nothing to hide. If you're a robot and don't know it...
Computer Face was quiet for a long moment. Finally, he said, I'm not a robot.
Uterus nodded to Brundy and Mackenzie. They let the big man go and proceeded to pick up the weapon parts and broken table pieces while Trevor pulled up another chair and sat down in front of Computer Face.
Obviously, I've only had a few minutes with you, so my understanding of your unique accident is very basic. But if my theory is correct, the hard drive within this tablet device, as well as its motherboard, has melded with your human brain. That's what's allowing your face, or whatever that is, to be projected through its display screen. My guess is that the melding is also what's causing your amnesia. If I can extract the data on the hard drive, it might give us some insight into what happened to you.
Will you let him do that? Uterus asked.
Finally, Computer Face turned to face the woman.
Why'd you stop your leader? He'd have wasted me if you'd told him to.
Because Trevor says you might not be a robot. And if that's true, then you could be a real help to us. Those things out there, the machine army, they think you're one of them. I saw that with my own eyes when the retriever wouldn't attack you. That could give us a real strategic edge that guys like him...
She pointed over her shoulder to Zeiss, who stood angrily on the other side of the room cleaning his weapons.
Don't take into consideration.
But, she said, reaching into the waistline of her pants, if you are a fucking machine, we'll extract every bit of data from your head and then slowly tear you to pieces until you're nothing but a brain and a pair of eyes. Then I'm gonna shove you inside myself and make you live there.
Extracting her hand, she pulled out three slimy, red, glowing robot eyes, still aware, still rolling in their casings.
Just like the machines do to us. Just like they did to my husband, motherfucker.
Computer Face looked at Trevor. The technician smiled and shrugged.
That's why they call her General Uterus.
Trevor placed a soldering iron connected to two wires against the ports in the side of Computer Face's head.
This might hurt just a bit.
Trevor attached the wires to a device in his lap. A loud pop and spark made General Uterus jump and pull out her weapon. Computer Face's glowing green screen went black. His body slumped over. Zeiss called from across the room.
Is he dead?
Hey, you reader fuckers. Are you listening to the Watching with Strangers podcast with me, Kevin Strange, and Travis, the Encyclopedia Britannica of cult movies?
Hi, I am.
Are you? What are you listening to, man? What are the kind of movies they're missing by not listening to the show?
Oh, man. Monster Squad?
Monster Squad? The Fred Decker-directed Monster Squad?
Absolutely. We've got Nards.
Yes, we do have Nards. What else?
Chopping Mall.
Chopping Mall, people probably haven't heard of. Trying to pick something
that they've heard. Well, that's their problem. Listen to the podcast. Over the Top.
Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. What else?
Out for Justice.
With Steven Seagal? Guys, you're missing these epic 80s movie reviews. They're not all from the 80s, but some of them are, and you should be listening to it. Now fuck off.
All right, so Jeremy's finished with his fidget spinner.
Yep, my Father's Day present.
Yeah, we were talking during the break that we forgot to talk at the beginning portion of the podcast about another post that started all kinds of controversy. I just can't have any opinions on the internet without people yelling at me. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between feminine female characters and masculine female characters. And
who's your top four?
No one understands the difference. No. It is apparently this...
Who's his top four everybody was crazy, arguing
about? It's this crazy subtlety, apparently, that men don't understand what makes men and women different fundamentally. My personal top four that I was talking about in this particular instance was Sarah Connor from Terminator 2, which people flip out and say, she's a dude, bro, she's a dude, bro. But the whole point of Terminator 2, if you listen to the voiceovers as she's preparing John for the apocalypse, she's fighting her maternal instinct to protect him by building an artificial masculine shell because his father, Kyle Reese, died in the first movie. And he has no paternal figure to raise him. And she's the machine, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is taking that spot as the movie goes on. And he becomes the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator becomes the father figure that Sarah was trying to be. And she was able to take her...
She was trying to play both roles.
She was trying to play both roles until... And
figured that he didn't need the nurturing role as much.
So because he was going to be...
Does not the everybody leader. Know?
Nobody understands this. They all say, no, she's a masculine character. I said, no, she artificially creates a masculine personality to which raise her son. And she explicitly explains in the voiceovers of the film. Like, you can't miss it. And people miss it. I talk about Ripley from Aliens, the second Aliens, which was written by James Cameron, which is different than the first Alien. She's the same actress. Sigourney Weaver plays Ripley in both movies.
But you see more of her feminine side as a protector of a child.
I made that point. I said they go so... She's the mother of the Marines. Yeah. When the Marines go off into the hive, she's the one on the walkie-talkie trying to guide them and protect them and keep them safe, and they're ignoring her. She's trying to be maternal towards the Marines. They push this point. James Cameron pushes this point so far that they even give her a child to protect. To even draw out the new character.
Is the Space Marines.
Yes. The whole point was to create a physical representation of her motherly, nurturing personality type. As if that point wasn't made clear enough, they give you queen of the aliens. And it is matriarch versus matriarch. When Ripley has to get into the loader, the heavy loader at the end, and fist fight with the queen, that's two mothers fighting over... And there's a scene where Ripley is threatening her eggs. I'm going to burn everything if you don't let us go. And the queen alien says, okay, go. That is mother versus mother.
Matriarch versus matriarch. 100%.
There's
strong female leads on both sides.
Yes, but strong...
Feminine female.
Maternal leads, mm-hmm. Not strong paternal female leads. There's a huge difference.
What do they think that femininity... that's what's so crazy about all this crap. They think when people are talking about femininity, it's dressing up in pretty dresses and shoes, I guess.
Which can be part of what femininity is, but it is not. But it is not femininity.
But that isn't what... I mean, the main purpose of women in, you know... the biological world for humans
is to nurture and protect
their children. Yeah,
nurture and protect. not only their women, but the household in general, their nest. Mm-hmm. They nurture and protect their nest. And but if you step foot in the nest...
I was raised by a bunch of women. And
I was too.
And they're all your mother. I mean, you have a mother, but they all mother you.
Act like your mother. Yeah. They all mother you, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, in fact, because I was raised by so many women, I display motherly characteristics to my friends from time to time. I've been told oftentimes at conventions when I'm trying to keep people from getting blackout drunk, when I'm trying to keep my chick friends from getting raped and killed by strangers, they say, stop. One of the big quotes from going on the road with Strange House is, don't mother me strange.
I know. When I went on with the Strange House books with you, I've heard that and I started saying it, even though I wasn't being the drunky one that was running around.
That's maternal characteristics. And people seem to have completely lost the idea of maternal characteristics. And these movies like Wonder Woman, where the character displays nothing but paternal characteristics, nothing but masculine characteristics, that is somehow a positive. That's the only positive way a woman can be portrayed. Fuck yeah, it's a kick-ass strong female lead. Dude, Sarah Connor and Ripley are probably the two most kick-ass women in film history, and they displayed maternal characteristics, not paternal characteristics. If you took those females out of those roles and put males in those roles, they wouldn't make sense.
No.
Those are mothers in those roles, well, not in 10 fathers.
Or 15 years
away
the world's gone, but
yeah, no shit, right? No shit. So the other ones on my list were Tank Girl from Tank Girl, who is a not a motherly character, but a very feminine. She everything she does in the movie is from a feminine perspective.
Yeah.
She uses her sexuality, she uses her cunning, her guile, and her quickness in every confrontation she has, and it's all males.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in this world are crazy, psycho, masculine dudes,
mm-hmm.
and she's able to outwit and undermine them at every turn, mm-hmm. not by punching them in the face and standing up being like, I'll beat you up, bro, because I'm a strong woman. She does so with her feminine characteristics, and she does so well.
Mm-hmm.
She's able to outmaneuver and outwit every character in the movie using feminine qualities, not masculine qualities.
Totally agree.
And then the fourth one was Harley Quinn from the Suicide Squad movie.
Because that's the one I saw somebody mentioned, and I don't think they get what Harley Quinn is.
No, they don't.
I
don't think anybody gets what femininity is. They believe it's feminism.
She's in an abusive relationship.
Oh, that's my God. It's such bullshit.
Yes, she is. But she is just as abusive to him.
That's just white knighting male feminist garbage. That's just PC leftist. We have to protect all women from themselves. I mean, she's a psycho killer.
They need to leave or read Mad Love. And you understand that.
She's a psycho killer. He's a psycho killer. They ain't going to have a
normal
wine and roses
healthy
relationship. There is a, you know, it's Stockholm Syndrome. Yeah, motherfucker, it is.
No, it is. I don't agree. When there are two psychos together, nobody's holding power, really. Everybody assumes.
I think so. I think that he has power over her, but he's the only person that holds power over her. And the way he abuses her is the way that she's the only way you could get, so anybody could get to Harley Quinn if they treated her the same way the Joker does, but the Joker's the only person that's willing to go past her crazy. Nobody can match Harley Quinn crazy for crazy except one dude with green hair.
Yeah, but
and
deep
so
down,
he goes even
deep down, he's still the, you know, the same way that she is to him. He just doesn't show it. I mean, if you read him in the comics, I mean, it's not portrayed much in the movies that way, but...
She's only been in one movie.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And it isn't portrayed in the movie that way at all, but they don't get time to do so. Hopefully in future Harley Quinn movies, there will be plenty of time to show the back and forth.
I mean, Jay always seems like he's, you know, abusive to her, but the second anything goes wrong with her... he's there and he's trying to defend.
That's what I mean.
His twisted.
He knows that abusing her is the only way to make her love him.
Yeah.
He knows that. She knows that. And like I said, anybody could, but he's the only one willing to go to that level.
But yeah,
crazy.
I saw somebody who's like, oh, I hope my daughter doesn't idolize. Your daughter's not supposed to idolize Harley Quinn.
Well,
she's supposed to be the bad guy.
The question that I wanted to ask that guy, but I didn't because I don't. I try not to. I just, as much as you guys see me flip out on people, I try to be respectful. But what I want to ask that guy is that girl's mother, is your daughter's mother in her life? Because it's not your role. It's not your role to tell that little girl what she should or shouldn't do with her life. She should be looking to her mother for that, you know.
Okay, this is from somebody who has a kid. So, from this perspective, it is your job to influence that. But you're influenced by who you are.
Right, and your influence, there's a balance, parenting has a balance between what the patriarch does and what the matriarch does. And you create a, I'm going to sneeze. And you try to create a well-balanced human being. It's when a parent is missing that the parent that's present has to then take the dual roles. Yeah. That's why I wanted to ask him, is her mother in her life? Because if her mother's in her life, but you're probably overstepping even I wouldn't want her to...
As a father of a daughter, your job is to be an example of what they should look for.
Absolutely.
They do framework the people they end up falling in love Absolutely. With by who you're there.
Absolutely.
And everybody was like, well, what's that supposed to mean? That's weird.
It's not weird at all.
First of all, I mean, literally, one girl whose dad's not in their life.
Exactly.
It's a little different.
It's literally how it works.
They're a little more shook and a little more confused when you see a girl with a father in her life.
The way you create your relationship patterns based on the relationship patterns of your parents. Mm-hmm. Period. Period. It's no weirder than that. That's just how that's cut and dry where it is. But these people don't. We live in PC world where the masculine female lead is what all men, all fathers, virtue signal on the internet. What they want their. I don't know. It might be good. It might be bad. But what it is it's a feminist character that was created to show that women. Can be patriarchs.
But Batman versus Superman, she wasn't like that. So they just went full throttle in this movie, I guess.
She comes from the Isle of Lesbos, boys. Man, where it's all women. There's no men. They don't even mention in this movie that Zeus created them, because that would be a male character that has a power over the.
What?
No, they just exist. They're just magic super women.
Ares is the villain, right?
Yes.
How do you get that storyline without Zeus being the father of the Amazonians?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, neither of us seen this movie, so we're trying to comment on a movie.
It might be good. It might not. I don't care if it's good or bad. It's just not my kind of movie. There's so many. I mean, this is the perfect time and the perfect political and social climate for this movie, which is why it's doing so well, because this is what the public has been told that they want. They want patriarchal females. And that's fine, except that, and one of the threads that I was talking about that led to me even writing that list of the four best feminine female characters was a conversation I was having with a girl the night before where I had another thread about this. And she and I were discussing the lack of femininity in entertainment today. There is no, you don't, or specifically matriarchy. Matriarchy is totally frowned upon in this culture. You don't have mothers displayed on screen, except in romantic comedies.
I mean, Game of Thrones does a good job.
Game of Thrones does a good job, but I'm talking about when you see these strong female characters, they're never mothers. They're just masculine. They're just men.
I mean, Cersei, you gotta say, is a strong female character.
See, Game of Thrones is totally different, though. It's a, and in fact,
they,
a lot of
hate it. That the social justice warriors hate it and try to.
And a lot of TV does. A lot of TV deals with families because there's time to. In most movies, you don't get. If you're going to have an action movie, you don't have families. Families aren't represented. They're not talked about.
Mentioned at best.
Briefly mentioned at best. That's it. But it's right now the hot thing is patriarchal females, and they don't have children. And they don't have roles as mothers. They just gender swap out the hero's journey for the classic hero's journey for the male protagonist, the action star, for a female. Literally, swap the penis for a vagina, and
the
then
vagina
they just
for penis,
swap whatever, and then just go to town. And there's no, you're still dealing with. For feminists, the way I describe feminism is an attempt to take over what they claim the patriarchy is by overthrowing men and replacing men with women, not by replacing this so-called toxic masculinity. They're not replacing toxic masculinity. They're replacing the penises in toxic masculinity with vaginas. Mm. Period.
Yeah.
They want power and control.
Actually... And from what I've heard of it, it is just the exact opposite of Superman.
Yes.
It's swapping the roles.
Yes.
She's in love, or her romantic interest, if it is romantic, is a male. Chris Pines. A human male.
Yep.
Captain Kirk.
Yep.
So.
Anyway, we spent way too much time on this because we got to get into this other. We got to get into this other thing.
The John Podesta pizza party.
So did you listen to that? Did you listen to any of the John Podesta pizza party podcast? But you did listen to most of the
ranting
of the ranting at Strangers, where Jerry Mannix and I spoke about Christoph Paul's accusations, which range everything from me being inappropriate with his girlfriend, even though she, which I have no idea what he's talking about, because she was one of the last people that, literally the last person to hug me, and spent the last 4 hours of my night on Sunday night at BizarroCon 2014 playing Jenga with me, sitting on the couch next to me, hanging out with me, and hugged me bye, and I went home. It's this character assassination shit.
We can't judge everybody by who we were. If this guy's really a cuck. Maybe you were inappropriate by not being inappropriate.
Sure.
Maybe switch roles. I don't know.
It's the character assassination shit. And I brought this up over and over again. So what ends up happening is, as I said before the break, they tag me in this post promoting their John Podesta Pizza Party podcast. And they tag everybody in it. Well, very quickly, and I went in the thread and I said, come to my website. Tomorrow morning we'll have our response. This was Sunday night. The response was going up Monday. Didn't even get a chance to get that far. Because within seconds, Jeff Burke posted that it's sad that that these people are trying to make a career disparaging other authors. My immediate response to that was, "Oh, you mean Christoph? Yeah, you know, a lot of authors get bitter when they can't find success, or they see other authors other authors that are more successful than they are. Because as I pointed out in our response, I have not only do I have a higher average rating on Goodreads." For my books than Christoph Paul does, but I also have a higher average rating than his pen name Mandy DeSandra. Not only that, but he cross rates his own books. Mandy DeSandra rates Christoph Paul books. Christoph Paul rates Mandy DeSandra books. So he's artificially propped up his average rating and number of ratings. I also have four times the ratings of Christoph Paul and a higher average. You would think that the more ratings you get, the more those two and three stars will drag the average down, based on the just volume of ratings. But even at four times more ratings than he has, I still have a higher average rating than he does. So that was my little quip at Jeff Burke that started it all off. And then and from there, shit got crazy. Christoph Paul, of course, came in throwing his crazy haymakers, as we talked about before. The drunk guy wandering into the mosh pit, just throwing punches willy-nilly at whoever will get hit. Then I had Jeff Burke trying to goad me. So right away,
Antifa's biggest fan, by the way.
Yeah, Antifa's biggest fan, Jeff Burke, editor at Deadite Press. It immediately turned into, come on the Pizza Party podcast and debate me. Come on the Pizza Party podcast and debate me. And then the hosts of the show, a couple of the hosts of the show jump in and they start goading me on. Are you scared? Are you scared to debate him? Why are you scared of Jeff Burke? What's there to be scared of? Why won't you come debate him? Here comes Christoph Paul. Why don't you debate me? Fuck Jeff Burke.
From the pictures I've seen of him, he's something to be scared of.
So Christoph keeps telling me, you got an ego problem. Then he jumps in and says, fuck Jeff Burke, debate me. And so at one point I was like, Christoph, have you insulted me? At any point in you insulting me, have you done so without putting yourself over at the exact same time? You call me egotistical, but all you're doing is talking about yourself.
Me.
I mean, Christoph came in there guns a-blazing. I have a job at Lit Reactor, and I have a book. I was lucky enough to have a book. It's called, like, Kirk Cameron and the Crocodile of Something. It's a Chuck Tingle knockoff. It's a gay sex political parody book, the same way Chuck Tingle writes his Gay for the Butt of the Whatever. And Christoph had one that apparently blew up and made him a couple $1,000, which is awesome. I think, as I've said all along, I want all of us to make money. The whole reason I criticize Bizarro and Small Press Horror is because they're choking it to death and no one's making money anymore. The social justice and the SJW shit and their dogpiling of anyone who dares criticize their beloved genres is what's choking the genres off. And so he comes in there, you know, I love my job at Lit Reactor, and I, just because I made money with my book, bro, and you didn't, you know, you're salty and you're bitter and a failure. I was like, Christoph, you came in here putting yourself over hard, brother. Hard. Mm-hmm. I was like, even with all your success, you can't get a higher rating on Goodreads than me, bro. I'm very sorry about that. I understand your bitterness at that fact, that I can be real and true to my audience, and that I can criticize, I can look at the, you know, I can look at the Mount Rushmore of horror and bizarro and tell them what they're doing wrong, and I still have a higher average rating than you do, bro. And I'm being honest and true and real. I don't have to play politics. I don't have to play nice and phony with people I don't actually truly like in real life. And that's not to say that Christoph doesn't like his friends in Bizarro, but a lot of those relationships are phony. A lot of those relationships are sycophantic. They only exist because of what so-and-so can do for so-and-so. For example, Christoph owns a publishing house, and he publishes authors XYZ. Well, authors XYZ also own publishing houses, and guess who they publish? They publish Christoph Ball and all his friends. It's all this incestuous small press. I publish you, you publish me. Everybody's sending each other these little, you know, 35-cent checks every month for their royalties because nobody's actually making any, you know, real serious money at it. And the fact that I can be honest and not have to be involved in any of that shit, it makes them mad. It makes them infuriated. It makes them crazy. And so what ensues is 5 hours of me being insulted and berated from Jeff, from Christoph, from a couple of the hosts of the show, and then some jack-off named Garrett who keeps coming in there making juggalo jokes. Okay. You know, because God forbid anyone liking St. Clown Posse. You know, we can't take that seriously. So I'm being trolled by a dude that wants to make fun of me for being a juggalo. I'm getting trolled by the hosts of the show. I'm debating Christoph and Jeff Burke at the same time, neither of which acknowledge that the other is debating me at the same time. So I'm taking shots from 5 different directions the whole time, saying, you know, I'm debating every, you guys are telling me, come on my podcast, bro. Are you scared? Are you scared? Are you scared? You're calling me a coward while you're all 5 shooting at me at once right now. We're in a debate. Mm-hmm. You're asking me to come on your podcast and debate you while I'm debating you right now in this Facebook thread. This is a debate. This is real time. And I'm knocking every bullshit insult you're throwing at me out of the park in real time. You're all fighting me at once. None of you will acknowledge that the other person is even saying anything to me. Because that's how villains work. That's how this works when you dogpile onto an author on the internet. You know, we talked about this all the way back at the beginning of the Reading to Strangers podcast, how they witch hunt, right? How they get on the internet and it's just like how Antifa does in real life.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's got to be 5, 6, 7 on one, or they scatter like fucking like gnats.
I don't know. I've seen 5, 6, 7 on one when one dude is throwing punches that they're still scattering like gnats.
That's exactly what that. This was the digital version of that. This was fucking 5 guys on me at once, and they didn't do a fucking. This thread is still up, and I'm going to link. I thought it had been deleted, but it hasn't. So I'm actually going to link to this thread in the description, in the notes of this podcast. So go to kevinthestrange.com for episode 23, Debate Me Bro, and you will actually be able to click on this this thread and read through this insane debate between me and 5 guys where they are just insulting the fuck out of me the whole time. The whole time I'm on the defensive. And it takes 5 hours. I finally break through to Jeff, and I finally start getting Jeff to answer some questions. Because I had to just, in order to get anywhere with these people, you have to be willing to absorb such a huge amount of insults. If you get flustered or engage them with their insults, they'll drag you through the fucking weeds, man. They'll tie you to the back of their fucking truck and drag you down the fucking street. You know, hypothetically, figuratively rather. And so it was hard. It was really tough to stay focused, but I know this, I know their games. It's like base stick man at Berkeley. The 5 Antifa guys come at you. You just have to stay calm and you have to swing, you know, you're going to hit every one of them, but you can't hit them all at once. So just take your shots. And you know, that only takes one because they're pussies and they're going to scatter. So you just hit each one deliberately, make sure you hit them square and get a good whack on them, and then they're going to scatter until the next group comes at you. And it was difficult. It was hard to stay calm. Nobody likes being insulted. Nobody likes their virtue being insulted. Nobody likes the quality of their work being insulted. I'm an artist. I'm proud of my writing, you know? And so anytime I would say something like you call me a failure, but I have all these awards and I have this and that, they would always talk, all you talk about is your fucking awards, Kevin Strange. Listen, I have to. When you call me a loser and I say, I'm not a loser, look at these things that I've won. Yeah. Your response to that is, why do you talk about this stuff so much?
The response is usually, like, let's compare it to another world. When fans start booing the away team in a sporting event, and they're winning, but they're just booing and slinging hate at them, the response almost from any athlete in any different sport would be, scoreboard, bitch.
Yep.
So of course you point to the scoreboard.
And then the fans that have been booing you the whole time go, oh, you got to brag about winning? You got to brag about beating?
No, they don't, because everybody understands once you point scoreboard, bitch, you've just been beat.
Yes, exactly.
You don't say, well, we should be winning, we should be winning, we should be winning. Somebody goes, scoreboard, bitch, and then you're like, well,
exactly.
That's just the numbers.
So I'm able to finally, after hours of this shit, and again, none of them acknowledging it, none of them acknowledging that this is an unfair fight, mm-hmm. that I'm outnumbered, that they're being disrespectful, that they are being bullies, that they are just being shitty...
It's a witch!
...cunty trolls. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they haven't been able to drag me into a witch hunt in a long time. And I didn't know that's what I was walking into. That's why I told Jeremy Maddox...
Maybe they're just bored.
That's why I told Jeremy... I have no idea.
They're like, we haven't witch hunted Kevin yet.
Yeah, well, not in a while. I mean, they have, but they haven't done it in a while. You remember I brought up you remember the Jeff Burke thread that you were, because I was off Facebook at the time, you were screenshotting the comments on the thread where he was like, I've been threatened by an author. I brought that up. I was like, because Jeff Burke was saying some shit like,
when they Voldemorted you?
Yeah. Jeff Burke was saying some shit like, I don't understand where you think this censorship is coming from. I was like, motherfucker, you have a whole thread on your Facebook that's 20 authors deep talking shit on me because I said I could hypothetically beat you in a fight. And you took that to mean I was threatening you. You knew that's not what that meant. But you took it to mean that so that you could have this dogpile on me. I was like, and you tell me there's no censorship in the fucking community? You freeze out anybody with any kind of... criticism for this community at all, and he's just going, these are good topics for the debate, come on the podcast and debate me. I'm like, dude, we're in a debate right now and you're losing. You have no answers. And he kept saying, I'm not aware of that. And I kept saying, if you're not aware of it, you're either lying to win an argument, or you're so out of touch with your community.
How a debate works is one person makes a point, the other people counterpoint it. They judge who made the better point. Was their initial point or the counterpoint? And then they move on to the next point and counterpoint.
And so
until there's winners, that's a debate.
So this shit show goes on for a while. I eventually say, because again, I've got five guys telling me, you scared, bro? You scared, bro? You should debate Jeff. You should debate Christoph Paul. You should debate Jeff O'Brien. I'm like, dude, you want me to debate everybody? Do I have to do it all at once? Do I need to tie my hands behind my back? Do you want me to put a blindfold on too? You were just trying to assassinate me.
See, I don't know you how you're trying to put straight pro wrestling heel on him. You want a debate, son? We'll get a debate. You'll hear my words.
So I finally,
and you'll see how good of an author I am because my words will overpower and crush you.
So I finally tell Jeff, all right, dude, if we were ever actually to debate, we ain't going to do it on your friend's podcast where you can all get, because they all ganged up on Jeremy. And if you listen to the podcast, it's not terrible. A couple of the guys don't even say anything. They're all admitting, I don't even know what Bizarro is, but this is awesome. This is blah, blah, blah. This is the most entertaining
fuck
thing.
Him straight.
I don't know who this dude is, but fuck him.
Fuck him straight.
But on the podcast itself, they kind of just remain quiet and let Christoph go fucking ham on Jeremy Maddox. And so they keep telling me, like, no, dude, we'll just be quiet. We'll just be quiet. We'll just be quiet. I'm going, I have literally nothing to gain by going to your house so that your friend can beat me up. We won't get into it, bro. We won't get into it, bro. I got sucker punched when I was in high school. And it was a guy and four of his friends. And they pulled... My buddy was driving. I was in the passenger seat. They whip-dicked in front of us. And my buddy pulled over, almost hit the curb. They jump out of the car, run around. I open the door. And as soon as I open the door, the one dude socks me in the nose. and I whip my fucking seatbelt off.
Sorry about that, dude.
I whip my seatbelt off, and I go to fucking jump out of the car, and I realize I'm going to have five guys curb stomping the fuck out of me if I get out of the car. So I sit back down. I was like, get the fuck out of here, you fucking pussies. Five on one, fuck you. Blood gushing out of my fucking nose. And they're going, no, man, we won't hit you. We won't hit you. Dude wants you by himself. Dude wants you by himself. And that's exactly. Exactly. As soon as you punch that dude and his fucking legs wobble, you got every one of those motherfuckers on you. I know how a fight works. I know how a fucking dog pile works. And I'm like, no, I have no interest on going on your podcast. I got nothing to win. You're going to sucker punch me and then I'll jump on me as soon as I start making points.
Fair point. Let's do a podcast one-on-one. You can put it on that. I'll put it on mine. We'll link.
So that's what I told him. I said, if we're going to do a podcast, Jeff, I said, we're going to do it one-on-one, you and me, and we're going to both take the MP3. You put it on your podcast network and I'll put it on my podcast network, and whoever wants to listen to whoever's can. And his response is, I don't want to give you any more clicks than I already have. It's like, why would I debate you then? That's an insult right there. You just threw another insult at me. I don't like you. You know, it's a bully. It's like, fuck you, bitch. Come fight me after school. It's like, dude, I have no interest in doing that.
I don't want to give you any more
clicks. I don't want to give you any more clicks than I already have. It's like, if you don't, so you don't respect my because criticism.
His friends are
so,
coming over to your
so Jeff doesn't, to the... Jeff doesn't respect the criticism that I level at his community, but he wants to debate me about it anyway. Mm. He doesn't respect me, but he wants to, I'm like, fuck you, dude. So he declines. Refuses to do so, and then they continue to goad me and try to get me to go on their podcast. I'm like, dude, it's not fucking happening. So this goes on for 5 fucking hours. I never back down. Christoph Paul ends up disappearing. The other hosts get bored and they disappear. It ends up with me and Jeff, and we actually do have a fairly productive conversation where I explain to him that people think the Wonderland Awards are phony, and there are authors that have come to me in private and told me that they will no longer accept nominations from that award because they don't believe that it's a meritorious award and that they will actually ever win the thing. That the winner is an honorary choice, not a meritorious choice.
We went into this.
And Jeff's response to that is, that's fine, it'll go to the next person then. And I said, it'll go to the next person then? You won't even address that there's a fucking controversy over it? How about you make the votes fucking public, dude? That's not even an option?
It's really easy.
That's not even a... We can't even talk about that?
Especially if they're using, like, any WordPress or anything.
I told him that. I said, there's a WordPress plugin that takes 2 seconds to install that'll allow you to show the public the who wins the votes. His response to that is, I don't really know any voting that's public in the literary community. Yeah, the Hugo Awards, almost every science fiction award, it's this huge... clusterfuck process so that they can show publicly who got the most votes so that it can be given out as a meritorious award, not as an honorary award.
I don't know any. That's crazy.
Jeff's, and this would happen if Jeff
in a world people vote online for everything, first of all. So it just makes sense literally. I can't come up with one. I don't know how most of them work. I'm not in the industry or it's not what I do, but I know that people vote online a lot of times. It's not a public forum where it says, hey, these are the totals. Yeah, but almost everything I've ever like voted on for somebody, you get like you vote and then it says, here's the vote, here's how the votes are going, and then it keeps you from voting again if you try to vote again. It's
or they're the kind of ballots that allow you to vote every day.
Yeah, right.
Vote as many times as you want every day until we're done. You know, that kind
of
thing.
And they always constantly tell you this person's winning, this
happened. Right. And that's not how these awards work, and that's fine. And I told him, I told him that's fine. It's your award. You guys can do whatever you want to with it. But understand that the private sentiment from members of your community is that it's not worth even accepting a nomination. That's how meaningless the nominations are. And you won't even acknowledge that you understand that. And that's how it is with Jeff. And that's why Jeff has been trying to debate me for years. And I have no interest in debating him because his response to every point you make is, oh, I'm not aware of that. I'm not aware of that. And I've always told him, dude, you're either ignorant or you're lying. And if you're ignorant, that means that you are out of touch with your own community. And if you are one of the community teacher, the community leaders, and you're out of touch with your community, that says something about the leadership in your community. Period. And I don't know what they expect. It's like we were talking about with CNN and their countdown to the Comey hearing today. I think that they think a debate is going to go way different than it actually will, because they live in this crazy leftist Antifa SJW world.
They got his statements to all this. His answers and responses to the formulaic questions they're going to ask him, his little memo. They went on TV last night like, oh my God, can't. And I get sensationalism in TV. I get that you got to get ratings. I get that. But they made it seem like there's bombshells to be dropped. And then had to go after he testified and said, well, we're sorry. We kind of misled it. And then 5 minutes later, switched to, well, did you see what John McCain said? Nobody could make any sense of that. I mean, it's just how that whole group works. And that's why I get so sick of having to deal with them.
And that's how I think this community would react. They would be like, oh, Jeff Burke is going to fucking slam and stretch Kevin Strange in this debate. And I don't think it's going to go the way they think it's going to go. And again, I'm going to link you to the literal debate we just had. And show you guys that when he's backed into a corner, when Jeff Burke is backed into a corner and presented with factual information, he has no response to it. Why do you want to hear that with our voices? It will be no different. There will be nothing different about Jeff Burke saying, I'm not aware of anything like that, or seeing him type those words. What is the fucking difference?
I mean, a better response is even an out-and-out lie. I mean, I hate to say the better response would be like, well, there's a couple books, one I hated, and I didn't agree with
them. Oh, he tries to use outliers. He does. When I told him that, where's the censorship in the community, and I said, the entire conservative political spectrum is censored from your community? And he said, actually, we publish a couple of conservative authors and religious authors. I'm like, yeah, you got two outliers, and they're both over 60.
Or what is also referred to by the community, or not that specific, but the whole SJW community, as token.
Yes, they have token conservatives.
They just gave you a token conservative.
And that's what I was getting ready to say, is these guys are over 60. They present no challenges. They say, well, I'm conservative, but, you know, all I hang out with are liberal artists, and, you know, I don't ever argue any points at all. Yeah, yes, you hang out with two guys over 60 that consider themselves Reagan-era conservatives. That's cool, man. That just blows my argument right out of the fucking water. Mm-hmm. While you're at the Antifa protest in Portland, bro. While you're at the fucking Antifa protest in Portland, you have conservative authors that you publish. Sure, buddy, sure. They're so out of touch.
It's like those,
like I said,
those
either
racists we grew up with, man. Said, well, I have this one black friend. Will work. Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
When's the last time he's over at your house?
Right.
When's the last time you invite him to the barbecue?
It's ridiculous. So like I said, the only way I would ever do that is one-on-one, and we would just, there would be no, you know, he's not going to give me any clicks, because anybody who's on his side is going to go listen to his version of it. On his podcast. And so to wrap
I'm
this
up. I'm throwing shade. I can't help it. I'm throwing shade. As disorganized as our podcast is, I'll go with us first. And as loose and free-willing, I couldn't stand listening to his podcast. I tried a couple times thinking that was going to be on when he was throwing shade at you. And he was having Bizarro Con. I mean, he had the Bizarro Con interviews that was literally 4 months later, right when you was coming in. So I don't know how many downloads he's getting. At least we try to keep our stuff topical and try to, you know, give a little love to the people who take time and effort out of their day to listen to us. I had to throw a little shade. I don't know. I'm sure that if we did that, he'd get more views from us than we would him. I don't know his exact numbers. But
so to wrap all this up, I think in a pretty tight bow, Jeremy Maddox starts listening to that podcast he was on, the John Podesta Pizza Party podcast. Mm-hmm. And he starts noticing things missing from the podcast. It's been edited. So he contacts the Jamie, the guy who runs the podcast, and says, hey man, I remember this interview being like an hour long, and you cut it down like 12 minutes or something like that. And he goes, oh, I just cut out pauses and distortion and awkward stuff like that. And he goes, oh, okay, cool. And Jeremy calls me, and I go 12 minutes?
Yeah,
what are you talking? 12 minutes of pauses from an hour-long podcast? So I do the calculation. It's 7 minutes, 7 minutes from an hour-long interview is roughly 12% of the entire podcast. So I'm like, seven minutes of pauses of an hour-long podcast? So yeah, I do the calculation. I'm like, bro, that's 12% of your whole interview is gone. And so he contacts him back. He goes, yeah, actually, I remember specifically there was a part where everybody was laughing, and I said, am I being trolled? Is this a gag? And you cut that out. He goes, oh, yeah, I did cut that out. And so this guy first just says, I only cut out pauses and distortion, then starts admitting freely to anything Jeremy can remember that isn't there. He just admits to it. Oh, yeah, that too. Oh, yeah, that too. So they want me to come on a podcast of people I've never heard of and authors who hate me. And they think that they're
a high percentage chance that if you do make a good point,
that it's going to get cut out. That I'm going to lose up to 12% of the interview, possibly. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck would I do that? When I guarantee you, we get more downloads for our show than they do. They're trying to drag me into. They think that I'm this giant ego freak. And they think they're going to drag me into a fight by going, oh, you're a pussy if you don't debate me, bro. You're a pussy. And they think they're going to drag a bunch of views off of me. We don't even have that. I mean, I'm not some big, giant fucking celebrity, man. I'm as close to nobody as they are. And they're trying to get me on this. And they all say, I don't know who you are, but fuck you anyway. It's like, dude, what are you people doing? What are you trying to accomplish? This is just the kind of nonsense that people have to deal with. This is why no one speaks out.
With Jeff Burke especially, just like the rest of Antifa, so they can go back to their friends and say, I was on the streets in Portland. Where were you?
I guess.
I stand up for this stuff. Where were you?
I
mean, it's...
This is why nobody speaks out.
Self-flagellation, so...
This is why nobody speaks out in this community, man. You have to take so much shit. And I told Jeff this by the end of the interview. By the end of the debate on the Facebook thread, I was like, this is what people have to go through just to communicate grievances with a leader in your community, and you ask me how people are censored.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So, that's my answer.
It's making me want to go back to our Jeremy Maddox interview for the 20th episode, Spectacular. And just see what we could make it sound like by cutting 12% of it out.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's like literally every 10th word.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So, you can take your fucking debates and you guys can shove them up your fucking ass. I have nothing to gain by debating with you. And I got
a better one. You need to do what you need. You'll stay open for any debate. You'll do it like you do Ranting with Strangers, and use it for Ranting to Strangers, and they can use it any way they want.
They won't do it.
That's a debate. One-on-one.
I have to walk into their hornet's nest and allow them to edit me any way they choose, and what do I gain? Nothing. I go to make my points, and they insult me the whole time.
I gain nothing. I'm not going to help in a nice way, because I don't know enough about the bizarre community, so I'm just going to do a little research and talk about their mother. Maybe have a picture. Maybe beat off to their mother the night before, just so I could be honestly answer. Yeah, I beat off to a picture of your mom from your Facebook page the night before.
So there was this thing that happened.
See how they like a little mudslinger.
There was this thing that happened to me my freshman year in high school, and this
I told you I was sorry already.
This 5 hour long, lynch mob felt like this. When I was in early high school, I was a fucking nerdy nerd. One of the biggest dorks in the school. No women spoke to me. I had no friends. I had one dude friend, and we read comic books together and watched horror movies together. And we were both such dorks that we didn't really even hang out at school because nobody liked us. And if they saw us together, that would make it even worse. They would make fun of us even worse if they saw us together.
I want to know who this friend is because we went to that same school.
I'm in study hall, and there's another nerdy dorky kid, and they're not my friend, just another nerdy dorky kid. And we're both like drawing pictures or fucking reading comic books or something dorky. And the jocks and assholes in the room all circle around us. And we've got like a substitute teacher or something. So it's like a free for all in there. And it's maybe 6 or 7 minutes before class gets out. And they start calling us pussies and calling us cowards and trying to goad us to fight each other. Not them. They're bullying us, but they're bullying us into fighting each other. And we're both so socially awkward, so fucking weird, so intimidated by this group of guys. And there's probably 9 or 10 guys on two of us, and neither one of us have ever fought in our lives. We've at that point in time, I was a skinny kid. There's nothing big about me at the time. And they end up, what?
Basically just said you had a little dick too, but go on.
I didn't, but
nothing big about me.
Everything I talk about goes back to my dick with Jeremy Daniels, but that's fine. I'm glad somebody's thinking about my dick all the time. So class ends, they march us out, and we're both too naive and stupid. We think, or at least I'm thinking, like, if I just go ahead and act like I'm fighting this kid, maybe they'll leave us alone. I'm naive. I'm stupid. I'm 14 years old. And this kid isn't into it any more than I am, but he's going along with it too. We aren't even making eye contact. We get across the street onto the sidewalk from the school. They gather all around us and they start shoving us into each other, making us, our bodies run into each other. And after a couple of seconds of this, I grab him in a headlock and drag him on the ground. And I can't bring myself to start punching him in the face. I've got him prone. He can't do anything. He's trying to push me off. He's skinnier than I am. I've got him in a headlock. We're on the ground. We're in the dirt. And I could start punching him in the face if I wanted to, but I don't even know who this kid is. I don't know him. We don't talk. I have nothing against him. I'm not an aggressive person at this point in time in my life. And I won't hit him. And so these jocks and assholes, they're getting bored and pissed off that I won't hit him. And so they come in and they start kicking both of us. And they're kicking me in the ribs, and they're kicking me in the head, and they're kicking this kid. And so we get up as fast as we can, and we both take off running in opposite directions. And we run away from these fucking bullies. And that's what this reminded me of. These five guys on me, all of them insulting me, insulting my virtue, insulting my honor, insulting my bravery. And it felt like those bullies that don't know who I am, don't care about me, just want to see this debate just to see who, just for entertainment. They don't care who wins. They're going to, as soon as they get bored, they're just going to tear into us themselves. There's no win with that. Mm-hmm. The right answer is you tell them to go fuck themselves and you walk away and you don't engage with the other. You don't even put the guy in a headlock. You don't even give them the satisfaction of dragging the guy to the ground so they can start kicking you both. The only way to engage bullies like that is to tell them they're all fags and go on about your fucking day. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I'm doing to these fucking douchebags from the John Podesta Pizza Party podcast. You're all fags, and I'm never going to come on your show.
I was really hoping that's what I'm going to do to these little fags.
I'm never going to go on your fucking show. You don't know who I am. You're going to forget who I am. It's kind of an insult fucking tomorrow.
Just because not even that.
Exactly.
Spineless and worthless.
So that's all you're getting out of me this week, gang. I hope you liked the show. It's way long.
I know.
We shouldn't have talked about the Wonder Woman shit because that added.
I know. That's why I'm not even getting salty about you pausing me about the Warhammer stuff. For the podcast.
Oh, that's for next week's podcast. So anyway, gang, hope you liked everything from
reading to strangers.
Yeah.
I know you've been doing a lot of podcasts lately, working hard.
Hope you liked everything from Computer Face this week. We didn't even get to talk about it. We'll talk about it at the head of the show next week.
Yeah.
But all the cool stuff you
can talk about it every week. We'll get people real bored just little snippets.
Yeah. So part four next week, Computer Face has another flashback and we get to learn all about Adam Prime and what led to the apocalypse, the robot apocalypse in the first place. So gang, Jeremy, you have anything else to add about
that? It's one of those episodes where I just listen to you mostly. Try throwing my stuff
out. No, you got a lot to say. Mostly about my dick.
Yeah.
Which is how I like it. That's why we do this show together. I rant about publishing and you talk about my dick.
Yep.
All right, gang. Till next week. Till part four of Computer Face. We'll see you.
See ya.
Keep
reading, motherfuckers.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.